Yud Nisan, Monday the 30th of March, Rabbi Gedalia Guten Tag, the structure of the Haggadah.
Good morning, everybody. I want to begin by saying I feel honored to be asked to come here and speak this morning. I've been, whenever I come to London, I just go around the corner to my parents-in-law, so I often find myself davening here at Earl Moshe. But there's a strange thing, that the shul looks different, right? I get here from an hour ago. It looked different this way, standing on this side of the podium, than it does the other way. It's a remarkable thing what a bit of distance and perspective can do. But at any event... Sorry? But at any event, thank you. I'm honored to come and speak here. I'm also honored to be put, apparently, before Rabbi Hartman, which is does something for my ego, pre-Pesach. If history is any guide, then in a few days' time, over 90% of Israelis and around 70% of American Jews will be sitting down for some kind of Pesach Seder. Now, I don't have a survey to back it up, but my hunch is that if you ask the vast majority of those people what for them is the Pesach Seder, they'd answer two words. It's a manishtana, or they might call it the four questions. For some reason, it's so central to people's idea, perhaps because we grew up with it as children, it's so central to the idea of the Haggadah, the Manishtana, that it remains so in people's minds. For that's the idea of the Haggadah. Today I want to discuss not four, but three questions, three different points, related points, about the structure of the Haggadah. And for me, these points open up the whole world of what's going on in the text, the subtext, the text underneath the text. And so I'll start with it. These are the three questions. Number one, so starting with the Manishtana itself. We know that, and this is the halacha, that that children are meant to read the Manishtana. That's right, every child is prepared for this for weeks in school. But if there's no, the Mishnah tells us, if there's no children there, then adults have to do it. And adults have to read the Manishtana. And even more remarkably, if you're on your own, if you spend the Seder on your own, you need to ask those questions. So question number one is, what is the point of asking yourself a question to which you know the answer? Why do adults need to sit there and discuss things that they already know the answer to? Question two is really the structure of the Haggadah. The central part of the Haggadah seems to be a collection of things that have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim, have to do with leaving Egypt. We might say, Yochel me Rosh Chodesh, it says, I might have thought from Rosh Chodesh in the story of Rav Elazar ben Azariah and his white hairs. There's the Mitzchila Ov de Avodah Zorah, there's Avodim Hoyinu, there's the fourth Arab Abonim, the four sons. But there seems to be, what's the central theme? It just that kind of seems to be like an encyclopedia that the Baal Haggadah picked off, he went through wherever he could find something to do with the Haggadah, and with Yetzias Mitzrayim, and he put it down there in the middle. So what is the central theme there? Question two. Question three is a particular, one of my favorites. Come back to it every year. We say in the Haggadah one line, which is a very interesting line. We say, V'ira lo hotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If Hashem would not have released us from Egypt, Hare Onu, we, our sons and our grandsons, will still be enslaved there in Egypt. Which is a remarkable thing to say. Because surely history bears out the fact that nothing lasts forever. Nothing lasts forever. No slavery lasts forever. Governments fall, regimes change, right? We're in the middle of lots of regime change in the Middle East. Things don't last forever. So in what sense can we say that the slavery would have lasted forever? The third question. Let's go back to Manishtana. We know that on Seder night, the whole purpose of the night is to fulfill what it says in the Torah, "Ve'higadlta l'bincha b'yomehu le'mor," which is there to educate children, right? The Exodus, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, is so important that it's got to go over to the next generation. You've got to tell your son. You've got to tell your child. But who is that child? That's the interesting thing. There's a remarkable explanation from Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler, the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, which really should be more widely known. It's a very interesting explanation. Who is the child on Seder night? He says, we are all children on Seder night. And he explains the following. All of us, he says, have two dimensions. We have a mind and a heart. We have intellect and emotion. Now, which is more important? So often we like to think of ourselves as rational. We say we're rational beings. We think, right, we're guided by our intellect. That may be true, but actually the more important dimension, the more important aspect is actually the heart, the emotion. And you can see that from a simple experiment. Let's imagine you hear a knock on the door. Someone's there, here in Golders Green, collecting money. I know a lot of people collect money that come from Israel. So you imagine you have your mushulach there from, he's collecting for the orphanage in Be'er Sheva. I don't know if an orphanage exists in Be'er Sheva, but he's collecting for it anyway. And he comes along and he says, you know, he describes to you, there's kids on the street and they've got nowhere to go. And we give them a home, we give them an education. And you think, okay, sounds like a good cause. But on the other hand, there's lots of worthy causes, local causes, and I get a lot of tzedakah already. So you give them a modest or small donation. Let's replay that scenario. And imagine that he knocked on the door, and he had with him an 11-year-old boy, one of the boys from his orphanage. And he tells the boy himself tells you this story. And he says, you know what, I was brought up by an Arab father and a Jewish mother, and my father used to beat my mother and myself. And it was terrible. Eventually my mother died, and I ran away from home. I found myself living on the streets, eating out of the bins, just surviving. And it was a horrible life until this man brought me into his orphanage. And here I am. I have a new life. And I have friends, I have a future. But this orphanage is in danger of closing down. Because we don't have any money, I don't know what's going to be, myself and my friends. And it's a different situation, because you feel the emotion, you get involved, and you open up your checkbook, you give them a generous donation. We all know that from real life. When you're intellectually involved in something, it's hardly involved at all. You can make decisions, well, I've already got lots of causes to give to. When you're emotionally involved in something, when you get engaged in it emotionally, that's far more powerful. You live it. It has a greater effect. The dimension of emotion is far, far greater and more powerful and more meaningful, more real than the dimension of just pure intellect. And that's how it is with Yetzias Mitzrayim, says Rabbi Dessler. Yetzias Mitzrayim is too important just to live in the dimension purely of intellectual knowledge. But I know that God took us out of Egypt 2,000 years ago. And so what? That's just intellect. It's too important to remain there. It's got to go inside. It's got to be internalized to become the lev, the emotion. As we say in Oleinu every day, we say, V'yodata hayoim, V'hashevois elavavecha. These two dimensions, right? You should know, yidia is in the head, it's in the intellect. V'hashevois elavavecha, internalize into the heart. And that's how it has to be with Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now this is where it gets interesting. How do you internalize something? How do you reach the heart? So Rabbi Dessler says, the heart is still a child, right? Talk about an inner child. We all have an inner child. The heart is the emotional dimension, is something that's hardly ever touched. And there's no use trying to talk logic to it. It doesn't respond to it. It's like a child. How do you reach a child? If you go into a kindergarten, what are they doing there? You don't teach a child in a kindergarten the same way you do a class in university. How do you do it in a kindergarten? How do you reach children? You reach them through music. You reach them through singing. You reach them through repetition, right? You go in on Sunday, you'll teach them X. On Monday, you'll teach them the same thing. On Tuesday, by the end of the week, they'll have it. You repeat it. You break it down into easy components, digestible components. And you make it very, very simple. And that's how it is on Seder night. We're trying to reach the lev, the inner part of a person, So that's what we do. We break things down. And that, says the Mishnah of Meliyahu, is why the Mishnah tells us that we have to use question and answer, even when we're adults, even when we're on our own. Because question and answer is how we reach the inner child. And that, for me, is something that just kind of a meta idea, an idea that lies behind the structure of the whole Haggadah. If you see this, once you understand this, it goes right through. You'll see it everywhere. It's a remarkable thing. You start, the Haggadah is so simple to the point of being childlike. Say, symbolism. Echod mi yodea. Echod ani yodea. It's almost like a classroom. Shnai mi yodea. Shnai mani yodea. And then you'll go on and you'll say, Ilu lehoitza kosh brochu, we say, Dayenu. That would have been enough. And if Hashem hadn't done it, had only done this, that would have been enough. And if Hashem would have done this, that would have been enough. It's so simple. It's so childlike. And we go on and we say, Al achas kama v'kama, how much more so? And we repeat the entire same thing. Shehoitzi ono mimitzrayim, he took us out of Mitzrayim. You just go on and can repeat the entire thing. Because this idea is, you see it once, you see it once, you see it right through the Haggadah. The Haggadah is designed for children. But we're all children, not just the Manishtana. The entire Haggadah is broken down to be a kindergarten lesson in to reach the heart. Because the heart is really the dimension in which real life takes place, the emotion, not just the intellect. As my father-in-law is sitting here, and he always says that the worst thing a speaker can do after half an hour is to say, and that was my first idea. So that was my first idea, that one's for you. So, moving on to the central portion of the Haggadah. We ask the question, what is the underlying theme, what draws together the whole central section of the Haggadah? What makes it not just a collection of ideas about Yetzias Mitzrayim? So really, if you look in the Mishnah itself in Pesachim gives us a structure that we have to follow. And from there, I think the ideas coalesce around that. The Mishnah in Pesachim says that there's one ingredient that you have to get into the Pesach Seder. Maschil begnus u'mesayim b'shlach. You start off with a shady past and the history of the Jewish people, and go on, move on to this sort of glorious future. Now, there's a debate in the Gemara, there's a machlokes. What does it mean? What is this shady past? This gnus. One opinion is, it's mitzchila ov de avodah zorah. That the Jewish people descended from a long and undistinguished line of idol worshippers. The other idea is that maschil begnus means you start from avodim hayinu, the fact we were slaves. Now, it just occurred to me this year, the following question. Take the opinion that you start off, that you have to include this gnus, this shady past of coming from avodim hayinu, that we were slaves. Why do you need a Mishnah to tell you that? Why do you need a Mishnah to tell you that? Surely, if we're in the business here on Seder night of talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, of leaving Egypt, and is there any other way to start than that we were slaves? Is there any conceivable way? If you want to tell the story of how we were redeemed from Egypt and redeemed from slavery, is there any other possible way to start than to say we were slaves? No other way. So what does the Mishnah tell us over here that we're saying over here we were slaves? Seems obvious. So I'll just share with you briefly the approach that I heard from one of my rabbeim in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Reuven Leuchter, so Talmud of the great Mashkiach, Shlomo Volba. He said a very interesting take on the whole thing over here. If you look back, if you read those words, Avod, those simple words, those sort of banner, headline words of the Haggadah, Avodim Hayinu, we were slaves and then we were taken out. Right? It's Einu Hashem. Sounds simple. But it's not so simple. There's something missing. In fact, if you look later on in the Haggadah itself supplies the missing, the link, what triggered things over there. We read later on, the Pasuk says, Va'at Orim Ve'eriyah. The Jewish people, as it were naked. They had no mitzvahs. They had no credit in the bank with which to enable them to leave Egypt. Then what happens? Hashem, as the Pasuk says, there was the two sets of blood There were two mitzvahs involving blood that enabled the Jewish people to go out. There was, famously what? There was Pesach, and there was Milah. Now, let's plug that back in again. Avodim oyinu lepar b'mitzrayim. We were slaves. And it was all hopeless. And then Hashem gave us two mitzvahs, and then we went out. Now, that changes everything. Because what that means, there's a new concept being created there, called a mitzvah, called the power of a mitzvah. That's an entirely new concept. Up to now, if you look back to the other maschil b'genus, the other maschil b'genus is mitzchila ovde avoda zara hayavisenu. Our forefathers were worship idols. That was the creation, as it were, the first conception, if you like, of the Jewish people. But at that stage, there was no two-way relationship. It was just God, it was Hashem turning to Avraham and saying, I want to make a Jewish people, you will be the Jewish people. And in fact, if you look in the Haggadah, it's actually remarkable. The verse, the passage that it quotes to that effect is, V'ekach es Avraham. Hashem says, I took Avraham, V'oylich oysa v'chol eretz kanan, I led him. It's all in God Himself, Hashem Himself says, I set up the Jewish people. At that stage, Jewish people, there's no quid pro quo. There was no two-way street to relationship. It was Hashem deciding to set up the Jewish people. Of course, Avraham kept mitzvahs. Avraham kept the Torah. But there was no formal structure for that to happen. But that all changed with Yetzias Mitzrayim, with the real creation, the final creation of Klal Yisrael. What changed was that it became a relationship, a two-way street. It became what we know as Torah. That's what it was. Avodim Oyinu, we were slaves. Hashem gave us mitzvahs. If we wouldn't have kept those mitzvahs, we would have stayed in there. There would have been no money in the bank. And because we kept those mitzvahs, it changed the course of history. Right? That is called Torah. That is what we know as the system of Torah. The system of Torah is not, it's two-way. We keep the mitzvahs, Hashem does things for us. What do we see from there? That Torah, that the system of mitzvahs is something cosmic. It's something that can change the course of history. These mitzvahs enabled us to leave Egypt and enabled the Jewish future. We see from there the creation of something entirely new, called Torah. And that is why, that is what Rav is, that is what the Mishnah is saying. You have to start with Avodim Hayinu. And we ask the question, of course you have to start with that. Right? There's no other way to tell the story. The answer is, this is not quite the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. We're saying the concept here of the creation of the Jewish people as a nation of Torah, of a two-way relationship, of the power of mitzvahs. When we do things, mitzvahs, they can change the course of history. And that is why, that explains something very interesting, a parallel that exists within the Haggadah, in the structure of the Haggadah. Remember, we've got these, the Mishnah is saying, within the framework of the Haggadah, you have these two these two central beams. You have the idea of the Mitzchila of the Avodah Zarah. We came from idol worshippers. You have Avodah Mayinu, and those are the axes around which everything else revolves. Now, notice immediately after both of them, you have the word Baruch. After the first one, Avodim Hayinu, we say Baruch Hamokoim Baruchu. Baruch Shemosan Torah. We thank Hashem for the Torah. And after the second one, we say Baruch Shem Havtachosai. That's an interesting thing. Because what's going on is in the first one, actually chronologically, the first one comes second. Mitzchila Ovde Avodah Zarah, we came from idol worshippers. We say at that point, the Jewish people was only a one-way street. It was Hashem doing something for us. That's why we say Baruch Shem Havtachosai. What is a promise? Havtachosai, what is a promise? A promise isn't a legal agreement. A promise can be something where I promise to you because I'm interested in promising it to you. There's no binding legal agreement here. It's not a two-way street. So we say thank you for the one-way street. Thank you for the haftacha. Thank you for the promise. Because at that stage it's Avraham, it's just a promise. But when it gets to Yetzias Mitzrayim, when it gets to the final creation of the Jewish people, this new concept called Torah, called a two-way street, the power of mitzvahs, therefore we say, Baruch HaMokom Baruch Hu, Baruch Shenosan Torah. Why do we talk about Torah? So you could learn this, you can understand that this, we're saying this as an introduction to the four sons, Arba Bonim. But according to this, it's not. It's thanking for Avodim Hayinu. Because Avodim Ayinu Bayetzienu was the first hint, spark of Torah. Torah being this two-way relationship. Torah being the power of mitzvahs. That's why we say Baruch Hamokam Baruch Shana Asam Torah Am Yisrael. And it reminds me whenever I think about this, it calls to mind a remarkable story of the great founder of the Muslim movement, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And I think it was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter when he was Nifta, his Talmud, the great Alter of Kelm, said the following words of Hesped. He said, very simply, Mehoben Gezein a Mensch, he said in Yiddish. We saw this was a man. And that was his entire Hesped. Right? He got up and he said, that was a man. And he sat down. Right? Sounds remarkable. You can get up and suck. Who isn't a man? What does he mean? What does he mean? The great Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was a man. Well, apparently that took some doing. Because when he himself was Nifta, the Alter of Kelm, his successor said the following words of Hesped. Mehoben kimat gezeina mensch. He was almost a man. Right? What's going on? The Yisrael Salanter was a man. He was almost a man. The Bani Musa understood something, this message of Yetzias Mitzrayim. They understood that to be a man is not a simple thing. Right? You don't just qualify so easily as being a man. You can almost be a man, and that's very good as well. Because Yetzias Mitzrayim is telling us, Avodim Hoyinu, there's a concept here called Torah, that our actions are powerful. Our actions cause a change, can cause changes in the world. They cause the release of an entire nation, the creation of the nation that we know as Am Yisrael, as the Jewish people. And that's what they understood, that the power of being a person, a man, every mitzvah, every small thing we think, well, what is it? I give a bit of tzedakah, I sit down to learn Torah for a few minutes. It's something so small. The answer is it isn't. It's cosmic. It's enormous. It can change the course of history. And that is the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, the work Nefesh HaChaim for Rav Chaim Volozhin, the main Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, is based on this idea. The Gadlus HaOdon, the greatness and the power, the enormity of what a person is. We are very, very big people. Sometimes we underestimate ourselves. We always are. I do. We think, well, what is it if I go to shul, if I don't go to shul, if I daven, what is it? The answer is cosmic. We have power in our hands that was given to us called Torah, called a two-way relationship. We are literally partnering with the creator of the world in a continued running of the world. And that's what we saw, that's what was being said, Avodah Meinu. I think I have 5 more minutes, so just to finish off the third idea that I wanted to address today, which is really a continuation of the previous theme. If we've, I think, discovered that the central, what's really going on here in Haggadah is the idea of the greatness of the Jewish people and the greatness of each and every one of us being part of that, of Am Yisrael, there's the interesting thing, this line of the Haggadah. It says, if Hashem, v'ilu lo hoitzei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if Hashem would never have taken us out of Egypt, we would still be there. Which, taken at face value, is very hard to understand. As we said, I think if you look in history, even recent history, right, the Soviet Empire only lasted how many? A couple of generations? 70 years. Nothing lasts forever. I think we're seeing even regimes that you thought were impossible to topple, they're over. And then they're back again if you're in Egypt. But the point is, nothing lasts. So what does it mean that we would still be there in Egypt? So many, many explanations are given, kind of a sort of a cultural shibud, we would still be there enslaved to their ideas, or different approaches. But according to what we're saying before, the Haggadah is saying, you can read the Haggadah quite literally. If Hashem would never have taken us out, we would still be there. Why? Because why do we assume that history changes? We're right, history does have a tendency. The world does change. Governments rise and they fall, and one nation becomes more powerful, one nation becomes weaker. But why do these things happen? They don't just happen. And that's what the Haggadah is telling us. The Haggadah is telling us that all of the world events that we take for granted as just naturally changing, it's the sort of shifts of the ebb and flow of power, it's not just accidental. They're working around the central axis called Klal Yisrael, called the Jewish people. And why is that? point is very simple. Because Klal Yisrael have a mission, which is to bring the Dvar Hashem, the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the world. We've eventually got to do that some way, somehow. So all of world events we see, you know, President Obama's elected for a second term, there's a new premier in China, Russia invades Ukraine, things that seem totally unrelated, right? China threatens, North Korea threatens South Korea for the umpteenth time, right? All these things seem to have, they're natural, they're just, they're foreign policy, it's just foreign relations, it's things are happening. No, says the Haggadah, they're operating around the central axis. Ultimately, all of these things are related to the Jewish people somehow, to the destiny of the Jewish people, and to the idea, the great idea, the mission of the Jewish people has to bring to the world the Dvar Hashem. And that's what the Haggadah means. If Hashem would never have taken us out, if Hashem would never have taken us out of Egypt, that means that the clock of history would have been missing its battery. It wouldn't have started ticking. If Hashem would never have taken us out of Egypt, there would have been no meaning and no purpose to the change of history. So it would never have happened. That's what the Haggadah is telling us. It's not telling us it wouldn't have happened. It's telling us that that's the way it does happen. It's operating around this central axis called the Jewish people. And I just finished with, a few weeks ago I was sitting on a bus to between Yerushalayim and Tel Aviv. Where I was going to give a shiur in Tel Aviv to some young English speakers. A lot of nowadays in central Tel Aviv, there's many thousands of young people who have made the Aliyah from all over the world. A lot of them from English-speaking countries, and it's you know, it's a buzzing place. I was on the way to give a shiur there, and I got onto the bus, and there was hardly any seats left. So I sat myself down. I found a seat next to a young, I can only assume he was secular, Rastafarian, be-dreadlocked Israeli, with, you know, long, and he was sitting there with his earphones, you know, bopping away like this for the first 10 minutes of the journey. But eventually he took his earphones off, and he, you know, being in Israel, people start talking. So he said to me, you know, I've traveled a lot in the world. He was in his mid-20s, Israelis after the army, they get around, they see the Far East. He hadn't just done the Far East, he'd done everywhere. And he'd been around the world, and he said, you know, there's something remarkable, wherever I am, they always seem to be talking about Israel. I'm sitting there in an airport in Hong Kong, and what's the local news? What's happening in Israel? And I'm somewhere else in Europe, and what's the news? Well, obviously it's in Europe, there's only one subject, it's Israel. And I'm, you know, wherever I seem to be, how is it, he said to me, that wherever I am, they're talking about Israel, this tiny country with 7 million people. Why do they care about us in China? So that was the end of his philosophizing, because he put his headphones back on again for the rest of the journey. With that pearl of wisdom, that's really the Haggadah. We would still be there. Because we're a tiny nation. But we do seem to be uncomfortably close to the center of world history. Why? Because ultimately, the clock of history has a battery, and that is the Jewish people. Because there's a reason for history. That's what the Haggadah is telling us. There's a reason for history. And that is the central theme of the Haggadah. And there's a lot more to be said on it, that from beginning to end, it's talking about the greatness of the Jewish people and our place in that story of greatness. Since that's on Seder night, I'm going to leave you there. Thank you for listening.